Yes, welcome back to World Football Daily here. It is Thursday's edition of the show, and I'm delighted to be joined by a very, very welcome member of the World Football Daily family, Mr. Juan Arango from Mad About Football. You can find that on www.worldfootballdaily.com. Joining us on the show today, Juan, how are you doing, man? How was the new year? How was the Christmas? We haven't spoken to you in a while here on WFD.
Nah, man. I mean, you know, it's you know, you've gotten big and, you know, you kind of, you know, don't like talking to little people anymore. But it's all good, man. You know, I mean, at least, you know, at least we're coming back to our roots today.
Hey, man, the only way I've got big is around my waistline over Christmas. That's about it, my man. That's about it. That's,
you know, but so how's everything over there, man?
Man, everything's doing good here. I'm here in the UK, and I've been keeping busy doing going to all the football, or the Premier League football that I can do throughout the kind of Christmas break. So we didn't get too much of a break kind of down here, but it's been rocky. I mean, last night was at Queen's Park Rangers last night, and you must have heard the shock blow for Chelsea's title hopes, and obviously a great lift for Rangers yesterday evening to go to Stamford Bridge and get that 1-0 win. I mean, how's the perception of Rangers' chances over there where you are? Obviously, you're in the thick of American US soccer. What's the perception of Rangers' chances of staying up in the Premier League, man?
I live in another country. I live in Miami. I live in another completely different country. But nonetheless, yeah, it was kind of a shock to hear that Chelsea lost to QPR, and especially the season that QPR had. But you just saw a team that really did the basics. They outworked Chelsea. Pretty much hustled them. And of course, the big statistic that everybody worries about is the final score that really put people in shock. And of course, I can only imagine what the English press is saying about Rafa Benitez right now. that's pretty much what's going on as far as what's going on. But that's the beauty, and maybe people think that I've you know, made a lot of fun of the Premiership in the past. But one thing that I do admit is that in any given round, any given week, anyone can beat anyone in that league, and I think that truly attests to it. And that's why in a league such as that, you really have to go in with your A game and really be able to go and play at your best level, because you never know who you're going to face and if they're going to come out and beat you.
I mean, Juan, this might sound like a bit of a wild out there question, but whenever we have a game under the floodlights, either in the UK or in general in football, there's always that extra bit of spice in the atmosphere, and there's always the likelihood that something crazy will happen, as was last night. What is it about a night game that just brings out the wildness of football and the unpredictability of football?
It's just a completely different environment. I mean, it's not just in England; it's everywhere else. I mean, here in the United States, the same thing as well. When you're looking at matches in MLS, or when you're looking in South America, or when you're looking in other parts of the world, the night game just has a completely different environment. It's just more intensity, more time to be able to marinate the emotions and the anticipation leading up to whatever encounter you're going to see. It's pretty much just, you know, all of those things. And in addition to that, when you're playing at night, you're the one that's the big show. You're in the spotlight, both literally and figuratively. So it's a combination of a lot of things. And I really believe that's what those types of matches get, that extra ambiance, you know, based on domestic league, second division, you know, even going all the way up to the Champions League too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think as well, for me, there's something about the floodlights, and you see a packed stadium from the air, from like the blimp view, with the floodlights shining down, a completely pitch black cityscape all around it, and it's like the whole world's focus is on that, and it just provides that, as I say, the spice to a fantastic evening of football. What have you been following throughout the Christmas period, Juan? What's been catching your eye since kind of Christmas Eve till about now?
I've just been reading up on stuff. Of course, yesterday I wrote an article on the passing of arguably one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, in Ladislao Mazurkiewicz, the Uruguayan goalkeeper who, back in 1971, when Lev Yashin retired, Yashin said, hey, you know, you're going to be my heir apparent. And if you look back at his career and what he was able to do at the South American level and the national team level, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, that's probably one of the stories that really hit hardest, on at least in this end of the world. Also, you know, just been trying to keep up, of course, with what's going on in Mexico and first division, second division, the player movements that are going on there. Just trying to stay adrift and trying to stay, you know, as far as news, just trying to stay up to date as far as what's going on during this Christmas break. Well, we have a Christmas break compared to what you guys have.
A brief break, I think, we've both been having throughout Christmas, and a little bit of time off is always nice. You mentioned the Uruguay goalkeeper, Mazukevic. I'm terrible with the Latin and South American names, man, so if I've butchered that, I do apologise. But, I mean, this is the guy who almost made his name in part for being the keeper that was rounded by Pelé.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was. I mean, he had faced him already on a previous occasion back in 1965 in the Copa Lib final, and that's where Peñarol were able to beat Santos in the semifinals back in 1965, and he pretty much shut out Pelé in that match. In that match against Brazil back in 1970, Mazurkiewicz was able to shut out Pelé, not only just that shot, but there was another shot, and I should have mentioned it. It was a goal kick that Mazurkiewicz had. Pelé first timed it from midfield and almost scored on him. So it was, in a way, it was good fortune in a real severe case of providentiality that he was not being scored on. Unfortunately for Uruguay, Brazil just had other options on that 1970 team that were just way too much for Mazurkiewicz, for Cubilla, and the rest of the gang. That was one of the surprising teams. But, of course, nobody remembers very much of what Mazurkiewicz did during that 1970 World Cup. Everybody remembers what Gordon Banks did in that 1970 World Cup, but yet it was Mazurkiewicz that was on that ideal 11. He was the first, or the last Uruguayan since, he was a Uruguayan player, the last Uruguayan player before Diego Forlan to be able to attain the honor of being in an ideal 11 in one World Cup. And of course, Forlan became the ideal 11 for Uruguay in that 2010 World Cup.
And you've been keeping an eye on the, as you said, the moves going on around South American football. And, and you mentioned to me just before we came on air that Freddy Montero and his potential move down to Colombian football from the Seattle Sounders. Is this a positive for, obviously it's not a positive for the Sounders. What does Montero gain from this, aside from, as you said to me earlier, the ability to play in Copa Lib?
Well, from what is being said in the Colombian newspapers and as well as on Colombian radio, and this is something that's been going on quite a while now, especially after Millonarios won their first title in over 24 years. It's a club that's getting financially sound. They're very close to it, and they really want to start investing for the long term, or the medium term, I guess you could say. They're a club that really wants to compete in Copa Lib. Freddy Montero's already expressed a desire to go back to Colombia. He's obviously doing very well here in the United States. His family's here in the United States, his wife as well as his parents, who have already been able to settle in Seattle. But he wants to go back to Colombia. He was a Deportivo Cali youth product who ended up coming here to the States. Now he's going to be playing with Millonarios, one of the big clubs historically in Colombian football. But it's the appeal of going to Copa Lib. And it's one of the things that really is being lost here is the appeal that he has. Whether it's personal or whether it's for his professional gain, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know him, and I haven't spoken to him regarding that matter. But he is he's really intent on being in that particular position. It's not for the national team, because when you see a coach like Jose Pekerman, he's really been able to lift that negative mantra that MLS had with previous coaches at the Colombian national team level. Many talked about, oh, you know, we want to bring players like Juan Pablo Angel from MLS to the national team. Never happened. Pekerman, in the meantime, with Carlos Valdez, was able to do that. He had no options about it. He even recommended Valdez to go play at Boca Juniors just a few weeks ago. That being said, Freddy Montero really wants to play Copa Lib because it's also a bigger, it's a bigger marquee. It's a bigger event. It's one of the most competitive tournaments that there are out there outside of not being the UEFA Champions League. But it could be an option for maybe a possible move elsewhere and making it a good option for Millonarios to sell him in the long term for much more than what could be offered under the initial or the reported terms that are being offered as far as the sales for Freddy Montero.
But after what we saw in the final of the Copa Sudamericanas as well, though, the South American football, obviously that was a major impact on the image of Brazilian football, the incident in the São Paulo's, in the dressing rooms of São Paulo Stadium. But in general, for South American football, that must have been a big knock. And surely the CONCACAF is a place where Montero could easily make himself a household name in North American soccer and turn kind of his own personal profile in North America into a piece of stardom, especially a team like the Sounders, who are building themselves up, still looking like they can be a potential MLS Cup winner.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that point. But then also, what's a bigger brand out there, the Seattle Sounders or Corinthians? What's a bigger? I mean, despite all the knocks that Brazilian football has had, despite the controversy that CONMEBOL still has, the European teams or even the Mexican teams, because most of the Mexican teams, just like MLS teams, are looking at Colombia to bring in some of their players. You've seen quite a few in the Mexican league really stand out. And I don't need to go much further than what Jackson Martinez is doing over at Porto. He was doing the same thing over in Jaguares, over in Chiapas. So, I mean, that's one of the things that's saying, they're still going to go to South America to look for the best talent available. It's not a knock on MLS, absolutely not. It's just that based on how the economics and based on how certain things are, you've seen the case with Lucas, who went to PSG. You've seen it with players that have gone, such as Oscar, in the past couple of years. Of course, now you see the whole sweepstakes going on with Neymar. But you do see players such as Freddy Montero who have an option, maybe not at the highest level of Barcelona or Real Madrid. He's 25, 26 years old. But maybe Mexico, who does have a salary scale or has the potential to compete with some of the Premiership teams, with some of the La Liga teams, with some of the Bundesliga teams, as far as salaries are concerned, that could be a long-term option. Right now, everything is such it's so up in the air. All I can tell you is that, those are some options that could occur in the long term, but I'm not exactly sure if it's going to happen. But as far as Mi Uniteds, that's a done deal for sure, based on the Colombian media.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know Colombian football inside out like I know maybe some of the European football slightly better. But from what I recall, obviously everything that happened in '94 and that incredible World Cup '94 side for Colombia that was tipped potentially to be heading to a final or at least a semi-final place, and then obviously we had the ESPN documentary, the 30 for 30 documentary, the two Escobars, about Pablo Escobar and his influence on Colombian football. Has there been a very long-term project of turning around that negativity that's always surrounded Colombian football, the crime, the drugs, etc.? I mean, how is it viewed on these days? Does it seem far more kind of legitimate as opposed to being run by the criminal gang lords, if you will?
Well, it's not just Colombian football. It's society in general that really has to that really had to do a lot of changes or a lot of self-reflection as far as what can be done. Of course, you don't in Colombian football. You haven't had the money that was coming in from those groups that were investing heavily into the Colombian football at that time. Now you do see that TV rights, that teams are making an effort to try and market themselves. It's baby steps at this point. It's been very tough because when you've had such an abundant revenue stream coming in, and now it's pretty much trickled down to next to nothing. There's been teams that have not paid squads in 7, 8, 9 months as far as payments are concerned, not being paid for 9, 10 months, a salary when you have to pay a rent or a mortgage or well, forget it. You have to pay retirement and be able to have some type of social pension. Clubs weren't being able to do that. So, I mean, it's pretty much had some ramifications, not just within Colombian football, but within Colombian society as well. It's something that has really impacted them. But again, I told you, it's a situation, situations such as Postobon, who are one of the largest soda and food providers in Colombia, own one of the clubs, and they're also the sponsor of the league. They're they've been really pumping in a great deal of money, as have the cable companies. For better or for worse, things are getting better very slowly in Colombian football. And you start seeing also a semblance of hope within the national team. You start seeing players like Falcao, like Jackson Martinez, like James Rodriguez, and I can go on and on and on as far as the national team is concerned, who now actually believe, hey, man, we have a chance to be able to get to a World Cup, something that hasn't happened since 1998.
And what a huge thing that would be for Colombian football. And the World Cup in Brazil is going to be so big for South American football anyway. Obviously, bringing it back to maybe not the home of football, I will always see that as being England, when I have to say. But the place which is idolizes and has been idolized as a home of football in Brazil. You've been keeping up with everything going on in Europe as well, and I know you've been chatting with some of the big wigs. You talk about us getting too big. You've been chatting with Mr. Guillaume Balaguer on Mad About Football, and in Spain in general. You talk about the financial troubles that are going on in South America. How much do you see the parallel of what's happening in Spain? And you're seeing players like Michu being sold for $2 million, coming to the Premier League and being, you know, stars in their own right, and somebody like Michu could have easily garnered a £15 million move or so. Had maybe people understood their quality and had there been the bargaining power in Spain. So what are the parallels of the Spanish plight in financial status in world football?
You pretty much said everything I need to say. I mean, you see players moving out for a variety of reasons. Michu, who I had the pleasure of writing an article, or actually last season when he was at Rayo Vallecano, talking about how he's been able to become, you know, the player that he's become in the Premiership. And well, coming in, we knew that he was going to be the player that he is right now in the Premiership. And right now, of course, rumors going on that, actually not rumors, it was confirmed today that Athletic Bilbao are in talks with Juventus to have Fernando Llorente go to La Vecchia Signora. So that right there is a huge step as well. There was an article on a website that I frequent quite a bit in Forza Football talking about how many of these players, the young players, I mean, look at the under-19s for Spain. You see young players from Arsenal, from Chelsea in their ranks. You do see players from Barcelona heading to other teams. Of course, we mentioned Michu. Alvaro Negredo supposedly was going to be heading to Chelsea. That's another player that's been going, of course. You know, we can also talk about Fernando Torres from Liverpool to Chelsea right now, and who knows where he's going to be in a couple of weeks or in a couple of months. But yeah, it's a really telling story, not just the situation of Spanish football from a tactical perspective, but it's also from an economic perspective that these players are being offered to Barcelona, Real Madrid. Maybe they're not biting on the bait. But then there's no other teams that can really compete with those salaries. So they end up going to the Premiership or they end up going to the Bundesliga. Look at what happened with Jurado. Look at what happened with Alvaro Dominguez, who's had a pretty decent first season, still has had some ups and downs with Borussia Mönchengladbach, but still has been doing rather well so far in his first campaign over with the Foles. But you do see that going on. It's a sad case because Spanish football does have a lot to offer. The problem is that there's a lot of teams that don't have the cash to be able to compete with the Barcelona, Real Madrid, and that disparity continues to grow more and more.
Yeah, and it's getting bigger and bigger every season. Juan, why don't you let us know what you've got coming up here on 2013 on Mad About Football that you can find at www.worldfootballdaily.com. You guys are going to be pretty busy this year, right?
Yeah, of course. We got lots going on. Actually, today I have Matt Wall from Soccer Pro coming in, and we're going to be talking about a lot of the new items. Pretty much we have a monthly segment where we talk about some of the new kits and boots and marketing campaigns and things of that nature in the world of football. So we have a big announcement. Well, I won't say it right now, but make sure that you're on our Facebook page, facebook.com/madaboutfootball, FUTBOL. We also have a couple of guests, hosts that will be coming on occasion, looking to get some interviews. Of course, last year we had Guillaume Balaguer. We had Eduardo Sacchetti, who was the author of the Oscar-winning movie a couple of years ago with A Secret in Their Eyes. It's not just football players and coaches that we're going to have on. It's pretty much people involved within football, writers, actors. Of course, we had Pablo Andújar, a couple of months ago as well. We've had all types of players and celebrities from the world of football and are affiliated indirectly with the game. So a lot of stuff going on in Mad About Football. So check us out, and you know, it'll be awesome. And of course, we have to have you on the show eventually.
Hey man, I'll be more than happy. You give me the call. My agent's waiting. We just need to sort out the price of you know, I cost money these days, Juan. I cost money.
No, I know, but you know, I mean, I'm trying to negotiate a loan deal at least. You know, I mean, that's how we do it in South America, man. You know, if we can't buy you, we'll try and loan you out for about 6 months or something like that.
Hey, it sounds good, man. We'll do a postseason loan deal or something like that. I'll come and play a bit.
I'll have to talk with Babyface about that.
I'm sure Raf is going to love you for that one, mate. Well, mate, it's a pleasure to get you back on the show, man. It's been too long since we last caught up with you, and I'm so glad that everything Mad About Football's going well, and of course, everything in your home life and New Year and Christmas was fantastic as well, mate. Thanks so much for taking some time out to join us.
Oh, no, man. Hey, man, you made me feel like an A-lister.
Hey, you are an A-lister, man. You're part of the World Football Daily family. You are a creme de la creme, mate.
Okay, man. I already sent out the wire transfer.
Thanks. Yeah. 50, just crack it into the usual place.
All right,
usual
man.
Place.
Thanks a lot. Peace.
Take care. Juan Arango there from Mad About Football joining us here on World Football Daily. You can find Juan's stuff on www.worldfootballdaily.com. If you are a premium member, and you can find it and download it from the site, listen to our show on the go as well. If you're a premium member here at WFD.com, and it's price of a freaking Starbucks a week. It's nothing. Get onto the show. Get onto the site. So much more coming here from World Football Daily here in 2013. Delighted to be having a chat with Juan Arango there. Babyface Rafa. I think it's a new one that could be sticking for the next 12 months at least, Rafa.
It's all because, I mean, you know the story, right, Juice?
No.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.